Welcome to Destiny. Now here's your host, Cliff Dunning.
This week on Destiny, we are talking about channeled material, material that comes through physical individuals who are channeling beams, consciousness, and sometimes they identify themselves as off-world beings or ETs that come through people on planet Earth. Now, this has been going on, channeled material has been going on since the ancient Egyptians. They have found writing of channeled data coming through. More recently, not that recently, we have the spirit channeling of the Delphi group in ancient Greece, and that has been very well documented. And then closer to present day period, we have China, we have channels in Mexico and in South America. I personally have been interested in the phenomenon and followed a couple of United States-based people that channeled. One is Lazarus, who is channeled through Jack Purcell. And then there's Abraham, who comes through Hicks. I can't remember her first name. And then so forth, there's a number of them. Perhaps one of the most famous entities to come through a physical being here on Earth is Seth, who came through a woman named Jane Roberts. This is in the late 70s into the early 1980s. And a number of very important books came to fruition channeled from Seth. Seth Speaks, and then there's the Seth Material. And these are regarded by present-day personal growth people like Deepak Chopra, Marianne Williamson, Wayne Dyer, many, many, many others as very, very valid. And it seems that the group consciousness that is known as Seth is very wise, has lived thousands and thousands of lifetimes. And as he was coming through Jane Roberts, he identified himself as a being with multiple consciousnesses, multiple lifetimes, and really understood the physical or the human condition. And this is what makes his material through Jane Roberts quite fascinating. Now, today, we're going to hear from a writer who actually participated in the Jane Roberts group gatherings in New York and has a lot to say about it to the point where we get a lot of details of just what Seth was about, why the material is important. And we talk about this new book called Recentering Seth, where the author, our guest today, John Freelander, actually has a great deal to say regarding his interpretation on themes which were very, very big with Seth, the most important known as you create your entire reality. So we're going to hear about the details on that and just get the full sense of it. We've talked about channeling off and on over the years. We've had Dr. John Klimo, who wrote the book Channeling, where he documents hundreds of channels. Some of the channels, there's one really well known. He's an alien. His name is Bashar. He comes through a guy named Daryl Anka. And that material is fascinating. Sometimes he will come up with some different mathematical formulas that are off the charts and talks about science and technology that we can only imagine about, or we can only imagine. And he's still quite prominent. In fact, if you go to Facebook and you put in there Bashar, you can still see the regular material that comes through Daryl Anka, this character who's from a different planet, light years away. And I personally, and I've mentioned this in many other shows, that I've personally heard from people that are channeling different entities and spirit guides and things like that. A lot of it is attributed to the higher self or the subconscious mind. I'm on the fence about it. We just don't know enough about it. I mean, frankly, we don't know enough about the brain. We don't know. We know barely about our physical condition. But when we start talking about other realities, the place we call heaven, and entities, and in some cases, relatives who come through, physical beings that are sensitive enough to step aside and allow these entities, beings, loved ones, aliens to come through. So it's kind of funny in a way. So this is kind of like a recap on one of the best known trance channels, which is Jane Roberts, and the entity, the consciousness known as Seth. So what does trance channeling mean? In a nutshell, we think it's this. The consciousness of the receiver is steps aside. So the waking consciousness of Jane steps aside. The consciousness of the departed soul, the entity, the ET, comes through the recipient, comes through Jane. And this is why, and the other thing that's very interesting, if you see photos or videos of Jane or any other person channeling, when they come through, it's like an energy comes through and it almost fills the body. You see little ticks and twitches, like the physical body is adjusting to the energy. And in this video, in this audio from a video, and I'll post this on the Facebook page, Earth Ancients, if you see the image, Jane completely changes into Seth. It's really weird. And I don't know what that means. We don't understand subtle energy, but I think what happens is this entity comes through, tweaks a few things, and then begins to talk through Jane. That's why the female aspect of her moves aside, and this male entity known as Seth takes over, begins transmitting information, and Seth speaks through Jane. So that's what trans channeling is. I have a tape recording from Jane Roberts giving a group presentation. Obviously, it's not Jane, it's Seth who's come through. And it's funny, when you read about Seth and Jane Roberts' experience with him, when he came through, her whole persona changed. She became very much more masculine. Her voice deepened and was different, had a little accent. And so it's kind of different. It's kind of strange. So, but this kind of thing has been going on for thousands and thousands of years. And I wanted to give you more of a full sense of it with our guest today, John Freelander, and his book, Recentering Seth. So here is a short excerpt. Listen closely. This is not a really good recording, but it gives us a sense of how this entity, this consciousness known as Seth, came through Jane Roberts. Have a quick listen.
And therefore we leave this esoteric glaze and return you to the cells that you think. But you know, though you may find yourself with a random thought that does not seem to fit in with what you are doing or thinking at the time, and so you dismiss it. It seems random because it does not appear to fit in with your organized picture of reality, but it is an important mosaic that you throw away. So I also joyfully and playfully and creatively challenge each of you, even now, jerky boy over here, to become more and more aware of your waking experience. and of those three thoughts that come in your terms like thieves in the night. They are not official. You do not accept them. The intellect says, oh, no. Listen to those thoughts. Open your mind a mite further. In your ordinary waking life, in the middle of your ordinary pursuits, and see what miracles are there. And I say, miracles. Miracles because they can help transform your own understanding and your own reality. And you have been blind to them because you fear you will lose your identity. Your identity instead, you see, can grow and include such experiences. Now, I told you that class was quickening, so the time is ripe for each of you. So this week particularly, beside the suggestions that I gave, be gentle with your own experience. Do not be such a disciplinarian that when stray thoughts or intuitions come to you, you dismiss them. Feels of your own being are filled with flowers that you do not recognize. You do not stop.
Strange. I detect a slight accent of some kind, and I have heard other accents with coming through different beings who channel different entities. So different people who channel different entities. So that's strange. I wonder if it's the different lifetimes kind of coming through from different parts of the world. So anyhow, there you go. Jane Roberts in the flesh there telling us, or channeling Seth. I don't follow it as much as I used to. I found that some of the future predictions weren't typically as clear. And you know, in some of the information that came through, these individuals was unique, to say the least. Anyhow, it is for you to decide what you feel, what you think. And so my guest today is John Friedlander, and the book we're talking about is Recentering Seth. So the phenomenon of channeling has been around for centuries. We hear about it from the Greeks and the Delphi oracles. We hear about it from different cultures. In fact, in my work with the Maya of Yucatan, my mentor, Humban Smin, talked about people going into altered states and talking with other levels of consciousness. And this has been a fascination of mine for many, many years. We had Dr. John Klimo on the show a couple of years ago, who wrote the book called Channeling, where he describes a number of different individuals who worked with different consciousnesses. And what happens basically is these individuals step aside and allow another consciousness to come through, and they are the vehicle for these consciousnesses. And And so it's quite a unique phenomenon. I've studied it, and the more prominent recent noted channels are people like Lazarus, Abraham, and there's a few others. Now, one of the classic channels was Jane Roberts, and we are going to talk about her today. And she channeled a consciousness or an entity known as Seth. And I was fascinated in this and read her books and was privy to a lot of the information simply because as a program director for a consciousness conference known as Whole Life Expo, we had people talking about Jane Roberts. Unfortunately, she passed away before I had a chance to ever meet her or see if anyone could come around and talk about it. But today we have someone who worked intimately with her group. And the title of the book today is Recentering Seth, Teachings from a Multidimensional Entity on Living Gracefully and Skillfully in a World You Create, but Do Not Control. My guest today is John Friedlander. And John holds degrees from Duke University and Harvard Law School. He began a formal meditation practice in 1970 and was introduced to the Seth work in 1972. What's really great interest to me is he was a member of Jane Roberts' original Seth classes in 1974 and also studied psychic meditation through Lewis Boswick in 1973. He's the author of three books, The Practical Psychic, Basic Psychic Development, and Psychic Psychology. And he's coming to us today from Michigan. And his name is John Friedlander. John, welcome.
Three books plus the one we're talking about today.
Oh, of course. Yeah, Recentering Seth. Great to have you on the program. John, it must have been mind-blowing to sit in a class with this entity coming through Jane. What was that all about?
You know, there are all kinds of channels. You call Jane, in your introduction, you call Jane a classic channel. Jane was the pivot in channeling. She was the first modern channel, and all the channels you mentioned have been profoundly influenced by her. Before then, there were the spiritualist and other channels, as you introduced, all the way back to the Greeks. But Jane transformed channeling. And part of the way that she transformed channeling was that she brought this incredibly lively, multidimensional being that had a fabulous intellect, was funny and warm and kind and clear and charismatic. The energies were just very powerful in the classes. Jane was a poet. And so you talked about when people channel, they step aside and act as a vehicle for the being. I think that's an ideal that many people have for what channeling is. But even the so-called deep trance channels, it's still a collaboration. Even if you leave your body, the body still has a lot of information and orientation and personality in it. More modern channels still tend not to be the so-called deep trance channel. So when I channel, I just step back and the beings that I channel come to the forefront, but I might even disagree with something they'll say. And the way we sort of deal with that is they'll say, John thinks this and we think that. by the way, usually when I think one thing and they think the other, I go with what they think. But so Jane, to get back to your question, Jane was brilliant herself, and so eloquent. And so when Seth came through, he was so charismatic, so smart.
Did she talk about how Seth began nudging her towards becoming a channel? Because I've had worked with Lazarus, and Jack Purcell, who channels Lazarus. Lazarus talks about, and this is pretty heavy, is the fact that he began, or the entity Lazarus began working with Jack through previous lifetimes, and began adjusting him so that in this current lifetime he could come through very fully. What was Jane's metamorphosis?
Well, in this lifetime, her work as a poet really trained her, because anyone in the creative arts has to sort of bring through something larger than them.
Mm-hmm.
And so so that's how Seth kept it both intense and under control until she was ready to do the larger part. For anyone who's interested, my cat is...
I saw that. He's on your lap. He crossed in front of the monitor, and then he's decided to relax on your lap. Well, that's... I love that.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit, John, talk a little bit about how it evolved for her. I'm really curious about it.
So I guess she published a few short stories. She hadn't been hugely successful as a poet. And she got this idea somehow or other that she would write a book about exploring various kinds of psychic phenomena for someone who wasn't a psychic. So she got a book contract, and she tried a few things this way and that way, and she started using the Ouija board, and stuff started coming through. And after a few episodes, Seth started coming through, and Seth was very powerful, and it wasn't something you could mistake. The funny thing about this is the publisher canceled the book contract. They said she was a psychic, so it didn't count.
Oh my God. That must have been frustrating.
But they did. She got another publisher, and then she went to Prentice Hall. So Seth continued training her through the decades that she was still alive. And her late work is very much more sophisticated. But from what's the first book that's well known, the Seth material on, it's mind-boggling. People like the great yogi Ram Dass were fascinated by the work that she did. In other words, it's like maybe a rock and roll star being accepted by the conductor of the New York Philharmonic.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about Seth, how he explains himself. Now, he is multiple consciousnesses into one figurehead. So can you, as succinctly as possible, because we could spend a whole hour talking about just who he is, but who is he? Where does he reside? And as basic as possible, John. Why did he choose to come through Jane?
Well, I'm actually going to use a different explanation than the explanation he uses. I think the Tibetan Buddhist explanation, you know, the great Hindu yogis are called the incarnations. But the Tibetan Buddhist, I think, is far more sophisticated. So the Dalai Lama is an emanation of something very large. And there can be multiple emanations from these beings at the same time. So I would say that Seth was an emanation, that you have this enormous consciousness. Sometimes in the books, Seth said that I was one of a small group that put together your planet. And sometimes he says, I was a ship captain in such and such. But it's a very different, vast difference in scale. And the way you can have that vast difference in scale is the real entity is too big to fit into any concept you or I have. And as I say, all consciousness expands in all directions. So one of those directions this huge consciousness expands in explored a reincarnational cycle. Its last incarnation was this ship captain. And that's the information that Seth drew on, and was the ship captain was very close to both Jane and her husband, Rob. So what you have is this huge consciousness having a project that lasts thousands of years to bring humanity towards the Aquarian age. And as one very substantial part of that project worked for lifetimes in various ways with Jane. And then when Jane was incarnated as Jane, shoots like an emanation of itself, full of this vibrant personality and charisma and kindness that we called Seth.
Okay. Now, one of the things that I think you were explaining, but I'd like to drill down a little deeper, is the fact that when you say this big consciousness is Seth, that big consciousness has many lifetimes within it, thousands and thousands of years. And I don't, you would know better than me if he's ever said something like that. I am many thousands of consciousnesses or many lifetimes rolled into one. But also what makes Seth unique is that he also perhaps is contacting or working with his original source, soul source, or whatever, this God mind. And if you could talk a little bit about that, and why this entity known as Seth is so all-knowing, all-understanding, and he understands the human condition because he's had these lifetimes to live, life, death, so forth and so on. So talk a little bit about that, then we're going to get into the book.
Okay, so... So this large entity not only has thousands of lifetimes as a human being, but explores other dimensions, other worlds that may be in seven dimensions rather than four dimensions, with, say, three dimensions of time rather than one dimension of time, outside of time entirely. So even you and I, if you get in touch with your soul, it isn't just something that is only you through your incarnations. I remember one of the first times I saw my soul, it was so big, it was how I would imagine the consciousness of a planet. It goes off in all kinds of different directions. It even is a planet someplace. So when Seth says he put together the earth, that's an aspect of Seth that goes way beyond the incarnational system.
Hmm.
So even as they're going this way and that way and the other way, they're able to do all those things simultaneously and with a very intimate, deep focus. So Seth brought both a deep focus of experience as a human being together with the experience of putting together what it means to be a human being.
Yeah.
Together with the experience of planning with other people what we might be doing for the next 2,000 years and what we've been doing for the last 2,000 years.
Yeah, which is just amazing for him to have that perspective, and that's what makes him so powerful. Before we get into the book, real quickly, John, as a group member, would Jane come up with a theme for that meeting, and then Seth would come through her, and how would the meetings go? I'm just curious. Because I would have loved to be in a chair to sit and be part of that.
It was fabulous. The meetings were really wonderful. We'd all come in. She had a large living room. I'd sit at the back near the window. And various people would sit, and we just start talking. And someone would say something that was apparently provocative. And Jane's glasses would come off. And you'd hear this booming, "Now." And Seth would be in. And before, you'd have this little, petite woman. Who had once been a great beauty, but she did have rheumatoid arthritis, and it had its toll. But you had this little petite woman. You had no sense that there was a little petite woman there when Seth was there. It was like you were standing before a real Wizard of Oz. You know.
I think that's hilarious.
It was awesome. And then Seth would come through and he'd give this dissertation on the implications of what someone had said. And occasionally, for example, back in 1973, I went to one class and I was in law school, but thinking I might prefer to be a psychologist. So I asked them, should I be a lawyer or should I be a psychologist? And he boomed out, "If you knew me better, you would not have asked that question." And he proceeded to explain that my job was not to get the right answer from him. That my job was to explore my life and to make choices. And whether they were good choices or bad choices, they'd be my choices. And he would not steal that discovery from me.
Yeah, which is a profound consciousness, which is another allowing you to live your life with your own functionality, your abilities. That's very cool.
That was so radically different. It might not strike you as that radical now, but when in 1973, every authority said it was your job to find a perfect master and then turn your authority over to that perfect master.
Yeah. Yeah. The 60s and 70s was about finding your guru. Right. And I personally don't go by that. I think that's kind of a misnomer and not helpful. I think most of us in the personal growth industry, or whatever you want to call it, the philosophy of personal growth, now believe that you need to work on it yourself and find the teachers to give you, point you in the right direction, or make suggestions rather than, you know, becoming a devotee to somebody. I've just never had an interest in the guru story. Recentering Seth, John, feels to me, and you tell me what you feel about this, but feels to me that you have a level of dissatisfaction with certain parts of the Seth material. And when I say dissatisfaction, one of the big things that you bring up is that Seth says that you create your own reality. That's the big, big issue. And Lazar says the same thing. Abraham says the same thing. These higher level consciousness that come through to physical beings say the same thing. And I'm just wondering, and we're going to get into reality creation here in a minute. Am I wrong to suggest that you wanted to review the material and perhaps present it in a more, I don't know, I don't want to say tactful way, because it's tactful in its original form, but a more helpful way?
Okay. When, again, Seth came in, it was way more than the Beatles and Acid. It was so different. It seemed to promise that all you had to do is work on your beliefs, or like the Abraham, work on your intent, and you could become happy by getting and having all the things that you wanted, or at least all the things that were important. And that all the people I knew, that's what we understood Seth to be saying. And it is true in the Seth classes. They really hammered in, you do create your own reality according to your conscious beliefs. Work on your beliefs. Everything is ultimately changeable. And there are profound reasons that we can go into about why that is absolutely true. That's why I talk about that you create your own reality, but you don't control your reality. So we all thought that Seth was saying you control your reality. Mm. That you can turn reality into tic-tac-toe. And that it was sort of an implication that you were a chump if you weren't getting everything you wanted. I myself, many of my friends and people I've encountered over the 50 years since I encountered Seth have often made themselves so miserably unhappy, thinking that they had some magic wand that was going to give them happiness through having and getting.
Right.
But so it isn't that I'm criticizing Seth. Ever since I met Seth in the book in August of 72, that philosophy has been at the center of my life, but my understanding of that philosophy is so profoundly changed. And instead of Seth being about getting and having and controlling your reality, Seth, I believe, is about deeply encountering life as it is. And if you understand, Seth, it allows you to make life, all of life, about meaning and about generating meaning. And since all life expands in all directions, yes, you get more skillful as you explore your beliefs. And you often will get more pleasant things and fewer unpleasant things.
Right.
But there's no one, not the dollar. You can't be spiritual enough. You can't be powerful enough. You can't be rich enough to never have anyone treat you unfairly, to get everything you want. I mean, let me give you an example about creating your own reality. I'm probably on the autism scale. I really had miserable people skills when I was young. I have worked on my people skills, and whether they're good or not, I have lots and lots of friends. So I've gotten what I wanted, but as the Buddha analyzed, everything is impermanent. So now I'm 73. Either I will die or my friends will die.
Yeah.
And one or the other of us will be miserable, even though it grows out of my growing skill. So pain is part of life, but the way you encounter pain, actually, it's in there, but it's in there more subtly. And that's what I'm doing, is recentering it and giving lots of concrete and useful skills for, yes, go ahead and pursue your desires. Anything else would be incoherent and irrational. But getting your desires doesn't necessarily make you happy. Not getting your desires doesn't necessarily make you unhappy. Happiness is a skill. It's a skill of turning your life into an ever-growing field of meaning.
I have to say this, though, John, in my studies of Lazarus, and he would have manifestation techniques and all these techniques, the 60-second technique for manifesting what you want. I really became frustrated because I wasn't getting the results I wanted, you know, more prosperity, the relationships I wanted, so forth and so on. So I began fading, and I think a huge number of people felt the same way. Exactly. And I think it may be because in his case, he was never physical. So I don't know if he had the physical experience that Seth had, and Seth came way before my time. I mean, in the 70s, but I mean, I was in high school. But the reality creation theme is a failure for a lot of people.
It's a complete failure, and that's why I've recentered it. And I don't think that's really what Seth was about. That's what we understood him to be about. It's easy to misread, particularly the early books, that because he's liberating us from very limiting ideas about karma. When I was coming up, and I lived in a yoga ashram when I met Seth in the book, you really thought you were pretty much controlled by karma. Karma was more like a jail sentence. If you had bad karma, you just had to live through it.
Yeah.
So the first couple of books that sold well of Seth's, the two main, the real beginning of Seth, the Seth Material and Seth Speaks, and then Nature of Personal Reality. Those books were to break us out of old mold. And those books did that. But he said early on in those books, somewhere. I can't find it now, but I know I read it, that you will be attracted to this for the wrong reason. You'll misunderstand what I'm doing.
Really?
Yeah. And we were attracted on that reality creation. And yes, you create your own reality, but when you play chess, you choose every move,
yeah.
But you don't understand the implications of every move. And life is so much bigger than that. So you create it, but you don't control it. You cannot turn life into tic-tac-toe.
We're going to take a short break from our conversations with John Freelander and the story of Seth and what channeling means and the material that is brought forth. We'll be right back. My guest today is John Freelander, and he has written a book called Recentering Seth. He discusses his years of being a part of a Seth group in New York that was presented by Jane Roberts, who was the actual channel for the entity known as Seth, and what experience he had, what information he's brought forward in this new book, and what he feels is an update on this Seth material. So let me stop you right there. So if we create our own reality, there's also the script we came in as a soul incarnated into this body. And that script supersedes our wants and desires, it seems like. Is that correct? What do you say?
Well, there are tensions and contradictions that are just intrinsic. And nothing is like a billiard ball isolated into and unto itself. So you are the center of your consciousness. Your soul is the center of its consciousness. You are part of it. It is part of you. You expand in all directions. When you die, you do not get gobbled up by your soul. You're part of your soul, and one direction you go off in is to become more and more a part of your soul. But you also explore unfinished business of this personality. So it isn't just the soul that's eternal. The personality is eternal.
Hmm.
You're part of the soul. The soul is part of you, but you go off in other directions. The soul goes off in other directions. So, yes, the soul has a very strong set of agendas. And those can be a profound constraint for your doing certain things that you want to do. But what you don't understand is there's a part of you that you think you know what you mean by I want this. I thought I knew what I meant by I want to become wealthy when I was a young person. But I didn't. And one thing I never understood, and it just drives me crazy about this New Age stuff, is people keep trying to make money without creating value.
Hmm.
So when you were doing all that Lazarus stuff, you were trying to outsmart the universe without having to learn to do what you're doing right now, which is creating value.
Mm-hmm.
So you understand money much better, even if you didn't think of it this way, than you would have if you'd suddenly gotten all this money.
So you're saying that you have to create a space for the abundance.
That you think you know what you want, but the metaphor I use is turn life into conversation. All this creation stuff of where you control your reality is turning life into a speech. I'm going to tell life what to do. But instead, when all consciousness expands in all directions and your life actually has meaning, it's not some trick question. So I tried to learn how to make money. And then life became a conversation. And I actually learned something. I learned something about money. I learned something about humanity. I learned something about kindness and generosity. And if I had just won the lottery, which I can't tell you how many people I've met over the decades who've gone bankrupt. One person, you know, they were going to the racetrack, day trading, do anything to make money except make something of value to someone else.
Oh, okay. So now I get it. You're saying value not only for yourself, but for those around you?
This is part of the conversation. People will pay you money if you provide them something that they value.
Oh, I hear you. Okay.
So you create a richness in this program, and you have up to 100,000 people who value what you do enough to download your podcast. Now, isn't that better than winning a lottery?
Well, you know, in a materialistic society, maybe not. And this is what we live in, and I think this is the big problem. And this is a sidestep, but the United States is a market-focused society. So it's constantly having more and more and more, which will eventually be our downfall, I'm sorry to say. Not necessarily now, but in the future. Because it's like, I need more. I'm not satisfied. And you may be satisfied, but it's that governor has been removed.
What I'm asserting is that when and as I learn to engage life as a conversation, so that I didn't think I already knew everything. And so no one wants a lawyer who tells them to read Seth books. They want a lawyer who knows how to write a contract, win a legal case. And to do that, I had to learn useful skills.
Yeah.
I had to learn people skills. And as I learned those useful skills, I actually cleared pain out of my system. I cleared programming. So I got more, as I learned to create value, I also learned to find value. I learned to clear the pain out of my system. And so life said, no, what you thought was going to be easy isn't. And what you thought you wanted was a shallow understanding. Here's what you really want. And as I really engaged life, and I learned ways of engaging life skillfully with balance and give and take, I developed, for example, people skills. It is amazing how much deeper and happier I am on the hard path I took than I would have been winning a lottery.
Okay. Talk a little bit about a term that you use throughout the book. You call it Sethian message. It's the Sethian message. What are you referring to?
Oh, I don't really know.
Okay.
But here's what I think I must admit. All consciousness expands in all directions. That's step number one. Step number two is, because all consciousness expands in all directions, everything you do generates more meaning in the universe. Even your worst bad faith thing you ever did is ultimately redeemed in growing meaning. Now, of course, you make the best decisions you can make. And if you do, you will tend to be happier and you sure as hell will have more pleasure. But you can't do something so bad that the world is less. And an example, going back to money that I give, is you can have a lot of money and then you run into a phase where your tensions and contradictions in your personality generate a reality where you go bankrupt. Mm-hmm. Now, you will have less pleasure, almost certainly, bankrupt, than you had when you had a lot of money. But you won't know less about money. You'll know more about money. You'll know more about it from a different direction. Mm. So, all consciousness expands in all directions. Everything you do is meaningful. Make the best choices you can make. But when things don't go right, find the meaning, create it as a conversation. Humans inflict pain on one another as punishment. The universe never inflicts pain on you as punishment. It's always a kind of healing. The universe is saying, that's the wrong direction. Go a different direction.
Fascinating. There's a statement that you make in the material in your book, and it says, and this is fascinating, I don't think I've ever heard this before. It says, the Seth material will be important for the next 21,500 years. That's
2,000.
Is it 2,000? I wrote down 21. Okay, how can it be important and substantial for 2,000 years in the future?
Well, I was doing a play on, there's a somewhat mystical philosopher, Albert Whitehead, in the early 1900s, said that all Western philosophy is a footnote on Socrates. No, on Plato. And what he means is that Plato, in his talking about Socrates, sort of set up the conversation, sort of the way you set up the conversation. He set it up for the next 2,000 years. And I think that's what James does.
Okay, so there is hints and there's material that the consciousnesses that are on the planet Earth in 2,000 years will find meaning for. In other words, it's your analogy of Plato and his writing is still effective today, not on a huge scale, on a smaller scale. What is the level of impact that this Jane's material will be in 2,000 of years, you think?
Well, I think, hopefully people like me are already starting to do modification, to reevaluate it in the sense of, 50 years of experience. And I think the nature of human consciousness itself will change. I think the new age is actually new. While the ground of being is always and already existing and contains everything. The nature of human experience, I think, is going to radically change over the next 2,000 years. So the psychic readings I do now, hopefully 100 years from now, everybody will be a better psychic reader than that. So the space that Jane opened up, they'll be able to do things with it. It's sort of like, someone who invented football. Mm-hmm. Who imagined that you would be able to have, when it was like rugby and no one had even thrown a forward pass, who would imagine that you could hit someone going full speed 50 yards down the field? People will be doing things that were unimaginable to Jane and to you and to me, but it's still a game that she opened up. And what she opened up is a movement. It changes the whole spiritual adventure in this way. There's sort of two major models out there that Jane doesn't use. There's the mystical model that your job as a human being is to become enlightened.
Right.
And that everything that isn't enlightened is only relevant if it moves you towards being enlightened. The other model, I think, is the getting and having New Age model of creating your own reality and getting what you want. So in recentering Seth the way I do, I'm highlighting what I think is a third model, which is that all consciousness expands in all directions, that you are not consumed by your soul when you die. There are particular ways in which you continue to collaborate with your soul and you continue to grow in all directions. And in doing that, you rely for a long, long time on the experience that you gathered as a human being. Successful, failure, that doesn't really matter. But the degree to which you encounter your life is the raw material for the rest of eternity. Lewis Bostwick called that your information. And the mystical model doesn't have a way of valuing your ordinary experience in its own terms for its own purpose.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. In your work, John, I think you hinted, I think Jane said that she was the only one that would be able to channel Seth, but it seems to me in your writing that you're picking up hints of him or the consciousness. Are you able to tap into his beingness when you're working with these other consciousnesses and channeling them?
Sure. Look, it's Jane's Seth is a co-creation of this enormous being and this really brilliant poet and very courageous woman. And that particular version is only, it's not, it kind of continues in the same way that back in the '60s and '70s, people used to say Gandalf lives. So there's a sense in which Seth lives, but that Seth is a co-creation with Jane Roberts. And I can kind of tap into that, but that isn't really who the being is. And that isn't the end of the project. It's not like Seth says, oh dear, Jane Roberts is dead. I'm done forever now. So yes, the various beings that I channel are also emanations of that being.
Mm. That's pretty heavy. In the book, you use a term called multi-personhood.
Yes.
What does that mean?
It's sort of referencing, we think the human experience in for a long time and in 2022 our conscious experience is so constrained to one physical body that we experience ourselves as one person. Even though you might be very different when you're talking to different people, it's not that different. But that's sort of what I'm talking about. And so we have a tendency to think, well, the soul, it as if it were stuck with one body. But the soul is multiple perspectives. Let me give you an example. I was brought into this mysticism by a jazz musician, records, John Coltrane and A Love Supreme. He died in 64, I think. I have encountered him, in the last 20 years. The guy who really pulled all this stuff together, Richard, has this, Richard Grossinger, he pulled all my words together and really wrote the book, and all I had to do was edit it, which was great. But I would say to Richard from time to time, that reminds me of Coltrane. And Richard said, I didn't really like Coltrane. But one day I was looking at Richard's guide, and one part of Richard's guide was actually John Coltrane. Now the guide is very big. It's composed of 10,000 different kinds of beings, but one part of it is John Coltrane, who I can talk to if I want to, and he continues to be John Coltrane, and that's multi-personhood.
Okay. So would you say that these consciousnesses are influencing you, or are they there for guidance and mentorship, or how do you work with that?
If you have a genuine guide, they will be funny and kind and generous and wise. It's like the best big brother or sister you could ever want. And sure, they know a lot more than I do, but they don't get stuck on that. And they would not, they don't tell me what to do. They give me advice, which I usually try to follow. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I was just curious. One area of the book that I thought was helpful is that I think in some ways you're trying to help people raise their awareness, but more importantly, their consciousness. And, you know, you can read certain passages and get feeling uplifted and so forth and so on. But to be more direct, as somebody who's been in the personal growth movement, John, as long as you have, what would you suggest for people that are looking to move beyond the physical and to tap in to the higher levels of consciousness to as you call it, for betterment?
I have a fair amount of free material on our website, psychicpsychology.org, where you can learn some of these techniques. You know, when I was coming along in the early 70s, if you wanted to learn something, you pretty much had to go to India or San Francisco. Now there's teachings all over on YouTube. I'm expecting to put a YouTube video up about how to find your soul, your Sethian soul, which is much more multidimensional. So it's easy to find things.
I agree.
This is your program.
The book's called Recentering Seth, Teachings from a Multidimensional Entity on Living Gracefully and Skillfully in a World You Create But Do Not Control. My guest has been John Freelander. As we conclude, I don't want to get into karma, but I want to ask you, how should we be preparing for the future? Because right now, this pandemic has, you know, even though it seems to be halted in some ways, it's kind of recycling and it morphs into different types of strains and so forth and so on. I think this has affected us profoundly, but what do you see as a future for Earthlings?
Well, I'm very optimistic, notwithstanding the horrors that we've seen and the horrors that are going on right now. Even now, they're not just Putin, but other wars around the world. But over in the last 20 years, over a billion or over a billion and a half people have moved out of abject poverty, not into middle-class lives, but they have enough to give their children milk and send them to school. I think we're not ready to deal with the ecological challenges yet, but I think we will before the end of the century. I think war will disappear before the end of the century. I think we will have a relatively sane set of governments before the end of the century. I don't think it'll be heaven on earth, but I think it will be steadily better. And I would prepare by becoming the most grounded, balanced, authentically kind and generous person. Because as I said earlier, happiness is a skill, not an outcome. It's not getting what you want. It's knowing how to engage life. And the way you get good at engaging life is to cultivate an authentic, not just let yourself be run over, but an authentic kindness and generosity that can say no in appropriate ways, but skillfully, not just dump on people.
Okay. Hey, I'm curious, and you can talk about this if you want. You mentioned talking about off-world consciousnesses, and one of the better known channels is Daryl Anka, who channels this ET known as Bashar. I don't know if you know that guy or not, but are you in any contact with off-world types that are curious about Earthlings?
Again, I think everything is so much more interdependent than that. So for example, the so-called nature spirits, I think a lot of them are simultaneously off-world consciousnesses.
Really?
Yeah, it's an interpenetration. It's not like...
it's not clear-cut, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
So their consciousnesses are not directly on Earth, but they're here. They have been here, but their originating place is another planet.
This is multi-personhood. So, for example, my cat, who you and I tend to see him as having, being this little thing that's a body, but he's also, he knows himself to be more than that.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's also the deva that's maybe 10,000 cats. And maybe that deva knows itself to be some consciousness, biological consciousness in Pluto. So maybe my little black cat is also a consciousness in Pluto. Again, you and I, because of our bodies are set up to make our consciousness very focused in a narrow linear way. We think of ourselves as one thing, but really we go in all different directions. And it's fine that you and I think of ourselves in 2022 as this one thing, but no one else does. Cat doesn't. Your tree doesn't. That pond out there doesn't.
Fascinating. John, a pleasure. Much success on this book. And I hope you can get out there and spread the word as more conferences and programs open up again. So thanks for joining me.
Well, thank you very much. It's such a pleasure talking with you.
You know, the channeling phenomenon, like I said before, is not something that's new. A lot of people don't hear about it because it's considered spiritual. Some people on the religious side might even consider it a cult because it is spirits coming through, may not be malevolent. They may be negative. I mean, it's really I guess it is faith-based in some way. You know, do I believe in this? Does this work for me? Is the information ringing true for me? And this is where I believe the big take factor is. Now, it's the information. For me, it's the information. Is the information valid? Is the information something that I find beneficial? That's the bottom line. Where it's coming from, sometimes that's a little odd. I should actually have Bashar on, Daryl Anka, because Bashar is from a planetary system light years away, and some of the things he talks about, the human condition are fun. I'm not a big follower of Bashar. I don't actually follow anyone, in fact, but I am rereading. I found the old Seth Speaks book, and I am rereading that right now. So I do find the Seth material, it rings true. Some of it rings true, and they're tapping into roots of our evolution that I think is beneficial, at least for me. at least for me. So I hope you enjoyed that with John Freelander. Hey, we're heading to Mexico Labor Day week this year. It's going to be September 2nd through the 13th. We fly into Mexico City. We will gather. We'll do some local Aztec ruins in the central area of Mexico City. We'll visit the largest anthropological museum in the world, which has more artifacts than you can believe. Just an amazing museum to check out. Then we get on a plane and we fly to Villahermosa, and that's the land of the Olmec. And we'll see the museums and some of the standing remains that are there. We head south to Palenque, and from there on, it's all pyramids, temples, and Maya buildings. We're going to do a Maya tour, and we come up through the coastal city of Campeche, the state of Campeche, and then we go north to Yucatan. So this is not to be missed. We do it every year. We only take about 20 to 25 people. For more information, go to earthancients.com/tours. You'll see the full itinerary. It's fairly reasonable. Get your deposit in, hold your space, and check it out. We have an excellent guide in Mimo Gonzalez. He has been doing this for probably 15 years, if not more, and he can answer your questions. I'm there to help you tap in with the energetics, talk about some of the history, and the pyramids that we see at these places are phenomenal. Most of them have been consolidated and excavated nicely so you can move around, and opportunities for photographs are unreal. Again, if you want to join us, for more information, go to earthancients.com/tours. Check it out. We do it every year. All right, that's it for this week. I want to thank my guest today, John Freelander. That was fun talking about Seth. And as always, the team of Ruth Thomas, Mark Foster, and the editing and graphics people. You guys rock. As always, thank you. All right, take care, be well, and we'll talk to you next time.